recorded.
Okay, with that, we will open the regular meeting and bring us to the action items. We have one action item A, the Bornstein lease amendment number two.
Okay, so Bornstein Seafoods approached me about wanting to sublease their dock with Fisherman's Catch. Bornstein has been pretty non-existent down there in the last 6 months or so. They still want to keep the dock. They still do have boats here. But they're asking to go on kind of a joint venture with Fisherman's Catch from Crescent City. They want to utilize the Bornstein dock to offload some of Fisherman's Catch boats, so we'll be bringing in new boats, as well as unload the current Bornstein boats. They want to do this. We're going to try it from December through March, the end of March of 2024. It'll be about 4 months. What I originally gave you guys in the first tag is through the duration of the lease. It runs us into a little more, it gets a little more complicated if we're going to go that long, and our attorneys wanted to thicken it up a little bit. So I think in everybody's interest, and then re-talking to Fisherman's Catch and Andrew, that we stick with what's in here, do it for the 4 months, and if it works out good and everybody's happy with what's happening and they want to do it again, then we would kind of repeat this process again. They will be adhering to the current lease terms that Bornstein buys. Fisherman's Catch will be responsible for landing fees. Either one of them, whoever is unloading, because Bornstein will be down here too at some point unloading boats. So whoever is will be required to pay those fees and as well as submit their insurance to us. Overall, I think this is good. It's given we're bringing in more boats, that's more landing fees, more fuel, more options for other boats. You know, it's bringing in, it's getting another fire down here too. So any questions?
Do you foresee any issues?
No, I don't. Fisherman's Catch also utilized our public hoist last year, and they came down. They're clean, respectful. They let us know we haven't had any trouble with them. I have no issue.
Will there be any competition between the two of them?
No. According to what I'm still trying to get my – they haven't wrote an agreement, but Fisherman's Catch is going to be unloading – crabs for his boat and essentially selling them to Bornstein. Bornstein, they're out of Astoria. So every time they come down here, say they're unloading shrimp boats and stuff, they truck their own ice here, and then they got to truck it all the way back up to Astoria. And I think having the employees and stuff, it's tough. They want the dock here. They want to be able to unload boats, but they're trying to come up with a little bit different way. I think that's beneficial for everybody.
We have dock space for them because they have to, the extra boats come in and they got to wait or something.
It's always a juggle. If it's 40 or 50 foot boats, I have some extra spots we can get them into.
Okay.
And during this time too, typically the only thing that's stopping these guys is weather. If the weather comes in and they come in, it's happened plenty of times before. We get more boats in here and we have slips, and you side tie them, you do whatever you have to do to make them work. But for the most part, these guys are coming in, especially if they're from Crescent City and day boats, they're delivering, getting fuel, and they're heading right back out.
Before you leave, can I see how the day yet for crab? How opening day for crab, was that set yet?
Not set, but I do believe December 15th it will open.
Any price yet?
No.
That's all I got. Okay, so any further on this? Anyone want to make a motion to approve Bornstein's lease amendment?
I got it.
You got it?
I make a motion to approve Bornstein's seafood consent to sublease with Fisherman's Catch.
Second.
Okay, a motion and a second, Danielle.
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Good.
Okay, information item. One for me.
Oh.
So, in kind of a really rapid fashion, after our last meeting, I was invited to participate in a group known as Oregon Consensus. Bobby Cochran, who we talked to, he asked me to be part of their work group that is developing a roadmap for how Oregon's going to try and work with the federal government on the development of offshore wind leases. And Oregon actually, even though that occurs in federal water, the state has quite a bit of authority to condition leases. So there are things that we can do in this roadmap that would say, okay, if you're going to lease here, these are things that you're going to have to do. Unbeknownst to me, I'm identified as representing the Port of Brookings Harbor. I thought it was because of my good looks. And so I want to let you know that in case you hear somebody from the ports on this board. And I made it clear to them, listen, I can't speak for the board unless I talk to them first.
Right.
Or unless you give me leeway to at least speak on your behalf on some issues that I feel you would be comfortable with. For example, when the port comes up, I'm asking that they do a port evaluation, similar to what California has done. They have three, California established three criteria for types of operations that would involve windmills. One is constructing them. Two is constructing components like hubs, and three is service to boats that are working, crew boats, supply boats, those kind of things. So in looking at California's assessment, Crescent City would qualify for the third one. And I think we would too, which is, you know, a guy who wants to run a 90-foot boat in here to change crews or, you know, buy groceries or something, we could do that. So I'm asking that be part of this lease stuff, is that they come and do an assessment and look at us. We're not going to build them. We're not going to build components of them. Because now you're talking, to build the, according to California's criteria, to build the towers themselves, they're going to require at least 138 acres to construct these things on. You have to have a deep port, and you have to have a sinking zone within your port, so when they bring one of these boats in, they can lower it down in the water and roll on and roll off stuff. So it's complicated. But anyway, I just want to let you know that I'm doing that, and I'll keep you informed of what they're saying. The other thing is, I'm going on the fisherman's side now, is I'm making, and I finally got some information about this, finally making it clear that we are going to fish those, and we want to have access through them. And we want to be able to fish in them in some manner. Now, the trawl fishery isn't going to work there. You know, pink shrimp isn't going to happen. Crabbing isn't going to happen. Bottom contact isn't going to happen. But we control tuna in them all day. We control salmon in them all day. As long as we know where the anchors are and where the interconnecting lines are. To put in perspective what we're talking about here, I finally saw a schematic of one of these. The base plate underneath it is 4 acres in size. It's 425 feet by 425 feet. So the pole extends up 600 feet to where the hub is, and the tip of the blade will be 1,000 feet above the ocean. So obviously they're not going to be spaced too close together. Probably at least, minimally, at least in the north-south direction, a mile in between. So, but there are issues that we need to be concerned about, one of which is radar. So as that blade's going around, it's going to interfere with radar. You'll be able to see where it is, but you won't probably be able to see a boat sitting underneath it. The only other unknown here is how much turbulence is going to be behind one of these things. So if you want to drive through them and you get too close, you may run into some wind. But that's all enough. So
So you said the tower will be 600 feet from the ocean surface, and the blade will be another 400 feet above that. So we're talking roughly then 200 feet of clearance between the blade and the surface of the ocean, if I understand you correctly.
Pretty much. Yeah, it was 200 feet between the blade and the platform. So there's a myriad of things going on here. I mean, birds are going to be a big issue. Whale migration is going to be a big issue. But a lot of what you've heard about noise and about stray current isn't necessarily true, because they have done a lot of work back east where they have these things that are anchored or pedestals. And there is more ambient ship noise in the ocean than these days. And in terms of electric spraying electricity, that's not really an issue. So we're finally getting some facts now about this stuff instead of the wild speculation I heard.
But the sheer cost of that just sounds like an issue.
Well,
I mean,
you know,
how much electricity does to do to pay for themselves?
They're not. That's part of the problem, is it costs so much more to deliver this kind of electricity than it does what we have.
Right.
But they did give us a schematic of Oregon's energy supply. We are 100% Bonneville power down here. When you get farther north, you get into a lot of coal generation, a lot of natural gas, hydro, and then there's some biomass generated electricity, but mainly coal and natural gas. And so they point out that if we don't do this, I mean, the reason this is happening is demand for electricity is going up and up and up and up. And Oregon is trying to attract these big data centers like Amazon and those kind of people, which take a ton of electricity. So the point is, if we don't do this, then imagine a balloon with four sections and offshore wind being one of them. You take that out, you're squeezing the rest of them to where you have to expand them. And so that means then we add more coal-fired plants or more natural gas plants, which goes exactly opposite of where this is intended to take it. So anyway, it's a lot. It's just a big can of worms.
So one of the things regards to transiting through them, from what I understand at the meetings that I've attended, it's not the companies that have leased Atlanta and erected the towers, it's the Coast Guard that determines whether or not we can transit through them.
Yeah.
How is that going to play out with all of this?
Well, that's where I'm trying to have in the development standard that, yes, we will. They'll be constructed in a manner so which we can pass through them safely and so that we can fish. The only reservation I have heard so far, and it's not from the Coast Guard, but it was alluded or attributed to the Coast Guard, is they're concerned about being able to get a helicopter into that area if somebody's in the water because of the turbulence and because of the interference. But that's all I've heard so far. And talking to people from the East Coast, they said, oh, no, we run around them all the time. So I know
I've seen videos where they've set people on towers in other countries to service them, but those blades weren't turned at the time from a helicopter.
Well, I think I don't know that you're going to get a helicopter to land on that platform.
No, I mean, they're lowering them by rope.
Right. But I think part of the issue with the clearance between the blade and the platform is so that you can put people out there to work on. I don't know all that, though. That's still, it's early days for this stuff.
Does it still seem like it's moving forward strongly? Because I've done some research and reading and stuff, and I've heard that Europe has shut down a whole bunch of their windmills, and even New York has shut down. They said it's too expensive, it's too problematic, they're having all kinds of trouble, and people are bailing left
and
right.
So what happened is they bid this, New York, bid the companies bid this prior to COVID, and they had a lot of expectations about the supply chain and about what kind of money they would generate for this in terms of selling power. Since that time, they've had nothing but trouble with supply chain issues, trying to get the stuff to build these things. and their actual experience is that it cost them a lot more than they thought to generate. So they are withdrawing from contracts. Or actually what's happening is they're trying to get subsidized, and they are. So the feasibility of whether they'll get built or not is down the road somewhere. So we're in phase two of this, or year two of the actual process. Once BOEM has announced where they are, you're talking about full build out. That's year 17. So that's how far away from this we are.
How much does a presidential person change?
You're dealing with national policy direction right now. So the national policy direction from Biden is we're going to do this. He has this, you know, clean energy by 30. And so that's moving it forward. But even if you change administration and change the policy, you don't necessarily change the issue.
Right.
Because irrespective of how you want to handle this, you know, if you go to any scientist and ask an ocean scientist about the ocean, they're going to tell you we got to do something fast right now because it's happening. And so I don't know. I mean, that we've talked about that. This could end next year. This could all end in terms of executive support for this. But I don't think it's going to end it.
But even yesterday, in the meeting that we were at yesterday, there was so much comment on how even the fishing industry out there, our ocean, has caused a lot of changes in the way that our commercial fishermen and sport fishermen choose what they're out there to fish for. I don't know if I can explain it better.
We had a guy from the University of Oregon out of Charleston, who studies crab, Dungeness crab. And he goes out and traps the, I don't know what they call those things, the little crab, tiny larvae, larval crab.
Yeah, the larvae, yeah.
So, and he's done this for a long time. And he's got a model built, and he tracks just, you know, you're looking at a scatter plot, so you've got a line, and he's all along, except in warm years. We have an El Nino. They're way more crap than he anticipates.
Yeah, they grow faster.
So they grow faster. And first explanation I've had for the complete disappearance of Ophelia crab in Alaska, it got too warm for them and they ate themselves out of house and home and ate each other. And that's how quickly they disappeared.
They ate each other.
Well, he said they're horribly cannibalistic, especially when they're juvenile. They eat each other all the time. He says, you wouldn't want to be a juvenile crab unless you were bigger than the other juvenile crab. Anyway, and that's, Sharon mentioned the meeting. We went to the sixth fisherman scientist roundtable in Newport. This is an effort by the state and by NOAA and Oregon State to get fishermen and the science community talking to each other. And they're trying to rely on us to give them observations about things we see on the ocean. So they're working toward a kind of a citizen scientist portal to where we can electronically report on things that we see. So for example, you know, they're really interested in sharks. So if we see a white shark, if we see a basking shark, anything like that, you can just let them know. They're looking for whale sightings, particularly blue whales and orcas. So, anyhow, that's going on also.
Fishing opportunities.
Okay, I guess that's kind of jumped into commissioner's comments. Anybody else have any comments? All right, our next regular meeting is Wednesday, December 20th at 2 o'clock. That we will endure.
Goodbye.
Do we have anything you guys need signed off? Yes.